of that?
Drove what?
What drove that desire, that motivation?
I just wanted to do it. I was like, I'm committed here. Like, this is, I just wanted to be rich. I was like, this is what it takes. So, like, just sit here and suffer until you get it.
Hello and welcome to episode 45 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. This week, we have a remarkable young man, Shekinah, the founder of TouchTech Payments. You might know the name as Shekinah is one of the people who sold his company to Stripe last year for an undisclosed amount. It's hard not to be blown away by this young guy. He is a supremely impressive guy, not only in what he's achieved, but also in the way he thinks. So as you listen to the podcast, I definitely recommend having a notebook and jotting down a few ideas about his thought process, how he approaches problems, drawing a straight line from the problem to the solution. Very methodical, very logical. His advice, especially around young entrepreneurs and student entrepreneurs, is huge. I know a lot of student entrepreneurs listen to the podcast, so there's a huge amount of value for you guys, but also for anyone just in their day-to-day life. The thought process of this guy is just beyond belief. Just before I jump into today's episode, I want to fill you in on something that I've been working on. So obviously the Entrepreneur Experiment was initially set up to chart my own entrepreneurial journey as I started a new company and explored new ideas. That is coming back, more to be revealed soon. But I am thinking about problems and problems to be solved with coronavirus in various ways that people are now changing how they work. So I'm doing a little experiment. So if you get time this week, jump on to intercast.ie. It's an idea about setting up a podcast company for internal podcasts for companies to communicate directly with employees. I think it's something that could be very useful in the current climate. So check it out, intercast.ie. So that's something I'm going to share with you guys. I'm going to share whether it's a good idea, whether it works or not. So I'd love any feedback, or if you have intros to any companies that you think would benefit from it, shoot me a message. And now, onto the podcast. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Give us a quick intro to yourself. That horrible question.
Yeah, well, it's a strange. Who am I? You know, it's a philosophical question. I'm Shekinah. I'm probably most known for the fact that I sold my company to Stripe. But beyond that, I'm a musician, playing loads of bands, loads of gigs, because it's fun. I love tech, I love economics, I love building companies. And, you know, I've recently, you know, come into this new life where I am a, quote unquote, a successful tech entrepreneur.
I love when someone has to say, you might know me best for.
Yeah.
That you've been doing some pretty good stuff.
I've done one good thing in my whole life. I'm like...
Yeah, but yeah. What age are you again?
25.
There you go.
that's a long time.
So bring us back. Bring us back to the start of TouchTech.
We went through a few names. Like, we started like Shield, then we went like some like random shit. Anyways, but we started off as me basically trying to find something I could do. Because have you watched The Social Network?
Mm-hmm.
The Facebook movie?
Yeah.
I watched that. I was like, this is fucking unreal. Oh, sorry. Do you curse on this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You're all good.
Okay. So like, this is fucking unreal. I need to be like that. I want to build my own thing. I want to have those, like, you know,
okay,
those moments.
What age were you at this stage?
18 or 19.
Okay.
So, around that. So me and my friends spent like 6 months just like throwing ideas at each other, trying to figure out what could work, what could not work, trying to find a problem to fix. Then eventually, I tapped my card off the back of my phone when Contact Age just came out. I had like another Android phone, of course, and then it made noise. I was like, oh my God, you know, they can communicate with each other. And I knew this to be the case, but I never put two and two together. So I then thought to myself, what if we could just pay like this online? Imagine, you know, instead of having to put in your card details like normal, and then having to go to this verify by Visa page, where at the time was, you know, please put in this third, fifth, and sixth digit of this password you never remember. You could just tap your card off the back of your phone, and then that's it, you know. So I pitched that around. We got into like the Dragon's Den competition in Trinity, and then got to the finals, and then this guy from a VC, his name's actually David Bowles, I know you can beep that off if you don't want to, he tells us, great idea, would be amazing, unfortunately, illegal.
Oh.
Yeah, you can't pay the way we wanted to. You can't tap and then put your actual PIN on the soft touch keyboard.
Okay.
Because things are on PCI compliance. However, the problem still existed, which is, you know, the inconvenience of payment authentication for journal cardholders online and trying to fix that.
He was at the Dragon's Den, was he?
Yeah, he was one of the judges.
Okay.
So luckily for us, even though the solution probably wasn't the best, we had still identified a viable problem to fix. And then the journey of like trying to find out what's the best way to fix the problem began from there.
Okay.
Over a period of like the following like 12 months, we kind of like shaped the idea, shaped our concept, and raised €50,000, got a team together.
And what age were you at this stage?
I raised the 50 grand. I was 18 at the Dragon's Den, and then I was 19 when we raised the 50 grand.
So you were just in college?
Yeah, just in college. Yeah, I was just in college.
What were you studying?
I was studying mechanical and electronic engineering. I used the word studying loosely because I failed miserably. I didn't really try very hard either. So,
what were you always starting companies? Or were you always like trying to start things?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. You know, I was just a very confident kid in general. Like I could talk my way into anything or out of anything, and I was very likable, and unfortunately also very agreeable. If you listen to Jordan Peterson, you'd know that being agreeable is a bad thing.
Okay.
But
I haven't read his book. It's on the list.
Yeah, no, not even just his book. Just lectures online. He has these really cool theories. But like I was just confident. I was like in my head I could do anything I wanted. It wasn't like entrepreneurial things were like part of my past or anything like that. I had no track record at all. This was literally my first attempt at anything.
It's very rare to hear someone say that had that level of confidence and to be aware of it.
It's probably because of how I grew up. Unfortunately, well, like everything in life, I wasn't in control of the people and the family and the things around me that contributed to me being who I am. But I had like a very good support system. My parents, my family, my dad, my mom, my uncle, who lived with us for a long period of time, constantly like giving like reassuring good things. And my mom's number one line, number one line was like, I've never in my life met another human being like you. But he didn't mean it in a good way.
It sounds like a pretty great thing. are unique.
I kept doing matcha. You know, he was like, I've never met someone like you. You're you're tyrant to this house. You know, but you know. But I thought it was a good thing.
Do you think you were born with that confidence? Confidence is something that fascinates me.
I think it's partly nature and nurture. I think there definitely is like a necessary chemical makeup for you to be kind of a specific kind of way, and then you also have to be nurtured into like and groomed to be confident. No, and I was definitely groomed to be confident.
What do you think the ratio is? Sorry, it's very specific.
Early
in the podcast.
I'm gonna say 80-20, but like the 20 is important.
Which way?
Actually, no, I'm going to say 80-20. 80 nurture, 20 nature. I think the nurture is very, very, very influential.
I agree. Yeah.
It's very influential.
I'm not agreeable, but I agree with
you. Yeah, it's very important. It's, like, it's so influential into like in a lot of things. Because I remember like, so because my uncle was my mom's brother, and he's from Nigeria. So, well, we're all from Nigeria, technically. So he moved over in 2002 or 2003, and he lived with us till 2006.
Moved over first, or you guys?
No, he moved over to Ireland.
To live with you guys.
To with us. And he lived with us for like 3 or 4 years. And for like the first 3 years, we shared a room, and we shared a bed. And every night he'd just be telling me stories. Just tell me stories about when he was a kid and like all the fights that he was in. I was like, yeah, and I was like, yeah, I want to be a big confident guy again. And then I think he really like shaped my, because I was getting these stories every night.
Yeah,
where he'd be like, yeah, and I did that. And I was like, I was super confident when I was a kid, and I was like, yeah, that's I want to be like that. I want to be.
No, that was just seeded in your mind.
Yeah, so I was like, I don't want anyone to be able to mess with me. So like, even back then, I think there was this guy called, what was his name again? Mark? Anyways, he was trying to bully me, but I don't think I was bullyable, if that's a word.
Mm.
Because I was like, okay. So he'd call me names and then hit me, and I'm like, well, I'm gonna hurt, but like, I'm not hurt. And the words.
That's the worst.
Yeah, it hurt, but I'm not hurt. And the words don't matter to me, so I'm like, whatever. I was so lackadaisy about everything. Like, you know, so like he'd built like, I think he had groomed a level of confidence in me that was just unbreakable.
Do you think he was doing that intentionally?
No, I think he was just trying to tell me stories and sound cool. he was definitely the cool. I think he was just telling me stories and sound cool. But
it's amazing the knock-on effect, something like that.
Yeah, no, I think it was super influential. And that definitely, and then also, I was fortunate enough to also be quite smart as a kid and not have to try very hard. So like when you go through life like that as a kid, and like you're not really trying that hard. And like you're still doing well, and also like the teachers, fortunately again, my teachers respected my intelligence, and they were like, oh, you're not fucking trying, you know, but like, you know, you're so smart, you kind of. I was hearing that from him, like, yeah, I'm smart, you're right, but like, you know, fuck this, what's the point?
Did you know that? Like, when did you know? Oh, I'm smart.
It feels like a pompous thing to say, like,
yeah, because again, it's so rare, but I admire the honesty.
Yeah, but it's not. When did I just assumed I was smart. I was like, since I was a kid, I was like, look.
You never knew any other way.
Yeah, exactly. I never thought otherwise.
That's so.
But because like intelligence is gauged like relatively everywhere. So yeah. so you're in school and you're like, so this guy, he's meant to be the smartest in the class, and I know for a fact he's studying 4 hours a day. And he only got like 10% more than me or 20% more than me in that test. I didn't give a fuck and I didn't try it. And he's only getting like, yeah, obviously, you know, if we were judging, in my head, I was like, if we were judging like efforts to output, I beat him. So you know, so I'm like.
That's unbelievable awareness for a kid though.
I don't know if it was awareness or excuses. It was awareness or excuses. But like that's, I remember that's how I used to think when I was a kid. And also like, this definitely didn't help. But when I was in like first class or second class, we had like tiered reading groups. So like if you had like really good reading, you'd be in this group and they'd give you these books to read, and then you'd be in this group if you had like slightly less.
What age was this?
I'm gonna call this 2001, 2002. So I was like 7, 8.
Okay.
Yeah, I was 7, 8. So there's tiered read, and I remember so you have to go home, read it, you read the chapter with your parents, whatever. And my parents never sat down with me to do my homework or help me. Next time, they never helped with my homework.
Okay.
So like they weren't really monitoring. So I was like, well, I'm only going to do stuff that I have to like produce in class the next day. So I never did any of the reading stuff where you go home and read it and then come back. So
what would you do?
Nothing. I just come to class the next day. I'd read what they asked me to read on the spot, and that'd be it. But like everyone else had gone home and like read it, you know. So I'm thinking to myself, you're all fucking going home reading this with your parents. I'm going home just doing the homework that I have to like produce, and I'm still in the top, you know, the top tier of readers in this class because that's what I knew, and I'm still considered like one of the smartest people even with the minimal effort that I was put it in. In which case, either I'm special or like you're all dumb. And I chose I'm special. You know, it was just, you know.
So you had already figured out the minimum viable dose just to get.
Yeah, so I'm like, what do I need to do to get by here? Because the name, the name of the game was like, you know, get through and, you know.
And what did you want to do?
I didn't know. I wanted to be a doctor initially because that's like kind of like ingrained into you as a kid when you're from a Nigerian household. Okay. So you have like 3 or 4 options in life as a Nigerian kid: a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, or a failure. eventually I chose failure.
Okay.
I think it was, I was 15 or 16 when I read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I was like, oh, this is so eye-opening. I was like, life is different. This is not how it is. I was like, I know.
Is that a good book?
Amazing book. Once You Catch the Drift.
Okay.
It's an amazing book.
Someone literally recommended it to me last week.
It's an amazing book. Then I read that book and then I was like, oh, are there other books like this that can like make me feel this way? And then I was like, then I read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, which is basically, you know, the greatest commonality between all people who have achieved anything in life is the belief in themselves to achieve. And I was like, fuck yeah, I do have that, I can do that.
Got that locked down.
Yeah, but like it's one thing to like, you know, think I can do whatever, but like then think, no, I can really do whatever. Yeah. And then I think those two books like kind of changed my outlook on life.
What age were you when you read those?
15, 16.
That's very unusual.
No, what happened? My friend's mom gave him the book and he didn't read it, so I took it.
Okay.
So I was like, yeah, whatever.
Ironically, though, you didn't want to read all the other stuff, but this just caught your attention.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
That's interesting.
I have no idea why I read the book. My friend's mom gave him the book. He didn't read it. I was like, yeah, I'll take it. So I read it. Just like half on, they just
thought, because you weren't told to.
I was fucking bored.
He
still hasn't read the book, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You think you would learn at this stage?
Yeah. You know. And that just made me like, fuck. This is some legit shit. And then that kind of shaped my vision of, you know, I don't really want to work for someone. I don't want to end up like working for like. Because the whole idea of the book is like you're working for three people, the bank, your employer and the government. You're working for the bank because of you're told get a good education, get a good job, get a mortgage, buy a house, get married. So you work 25 years just to pay the bank back and give them interest rates on the house, which is meant to be like probably your biggest asset, which really is a liability to a degree. Mm-hmm. Working for the government because as a PAYE earner, like half your tax at a certain point is going to the government. So half your income at a certain point is going to the government. And then three, you're working for your employer because you're, you know, if you work hard enough, your boss might buy a Lamborghini next year. You know? You know?
I love that story. I use that analogy so many times.
Yeah, so I was like, no, I want to be the shaper of my narrative. I want my life to pan out exactly how I want. I want to be rich. Like everybody else wants to, but like I want to actually be rich. So then I was like, what else could I do? So I looked into those things. So then I decided to do engineering and management and trading, because like engineering will give me the ability to create products and be able to like have the skill set to build, mm-hmm. and management will give me some sort of business expertise. Unfortunately, I missed that course by 5 points.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Terrible. Worked out well in the end.
I was going to say, hold on though.
Worked out well in the end, but like, you know. So that's like the transition of what I wanted to be and how it came about.
And what did you do then?
I got into engineering in DCU, actually, okay. Yeah. Where I didn't really focus, I didn't go to classes that much. I was like infatuated by music, so I spent most time because I lived in Kells, by the way.
Okay.
So this is the first time that I get to like be in Dublin.
Every day.
So I'm like, oh yeah, this is class.
This is brilliant. Yeah.
So like every, cause, and now that I'm in Dublin, because I'm a musician, now people have more access to me as a musician. I can do more gigs. So I was doing loads of gigs. I was up and down everywhere because I was like, oh, it's so much fun. Missed all my classes, failed most of my classes, had to repeat, failed repeat year again.
What'd you do then?
Oh, well, if you failed your repeat year in DCU, you have to go, well, they kick you out of engineering specifically. But I knew I was going to fail, had a foresight. So I used my CAO points to apply to Maynooth, and I got, you know, an engineering course in Maynooth because I had good enough points. Yeah, and then, but that summer,
was it?
Yeah. Was it that summer? Yeah. But that summer, I raised €50,000 for the company. And then, you know, their journey really began at that point.
And was it the college just didn't grab you, or you were like, I just want to do it. I just want to get on and build a company.
I think maybe I just didn't. Half of it was like my natural laziness and procrastination. So like I feel because I was constantly lazy and procrastinating like assignments and going to classes. Mm. The other half was like, I didn't see, there was no tangible like benefit for me. I was like, okay, I passed the exam, and what's next? I was a little bit short-sighted, so I was like, I couldn't see beyond, you know, the next six steps, you know.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking like, I passed the exam, I do well, I get second year, third year, fourth year, I get an internship, and then I get a really good wage paid job and I have all that. I didn't see the future far enough. I was like, what am I gonna get from this? So maybe that also played a part.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't really like, I didn't see the return of my investment, and it wasn't immediate enough for me.
That's interesting though. But what made it hard for you in college made you very good.
Yeah, but then again, that is also like a problem that plagued me in the business as well, because it's probably it's a it's a it's a byproduct of, like, I'm going to call it modern society and, like, the technical generation, millennials and Gen Zs, whereby you're looking for instant gratification, doing the thing that gives you immediate gratification. So, like, being able to, like, create a concept and then being able to run it by people, like, that's an immediate gratification. Yeah, so giving me feedback, oh yeah, that's a good idea, it's not good, you do this, do that, don't do this. And then being able to put together a deck and then going to pitch, instant gratification. You know, you get immediate results.
Yeah.
But then eventually, once you raise money, you have to now do things that are like six steps away from the result. And then, you know, so yeah. While it may have fortunately helped me, you know, at a time where it was useful, it eventually became a shortcoming.
Did you plug those gaps then with other people?
I'm plugging the gaps. Okay. You know, I haven't plugged it completely, but I'm plugging it. You know.
Okay. So you raised 50 grand. How did that happen?
I didn't get into Launchbox in Trinity, which I was the incubator. I didn't get into UStart. So I applied for Launchbox, and Launchbox didn't even put me past the application stage. I didn't even get into interviews. Then I applied for UStart, got past the application, got to the interviews, got to the final stage. In the finals, they said, sorry, you're not selected.
What was the idea at this stage?
Same kind of... what was the idea? The idea was slightly more developed at this stage. It was basically, I was trying to have like a one-click checkout all over the internet, but that was authenticated as well. So like right now, the Amazon one-click checkout experience you have isn't necessarily authenticated by your bank. So I was trying to like marry the two. So that every time you, so it'd be like, imagine you could sign up to PayPal, but PayPal has a relationship with your bank. And every time you did a transaction, it was also authenticated and it was still seamless and also safe. That's what I was trying to build.
That's a big idea.
It was a big idea. We never got that far. But one, you need merchants and you also need banks. So banks will talk to you if you don't have enough merchants. Merchants will talk to you if you don't have enough banks. So we're like, which one do we tackle first? So we're like, let's tackle the banks first and let's own their authentication experience. Once we have like market share in the banks, then we'll go back to merchants to try and like do everything together. And we just got into the weeds with the banks, and like that took 4 years to build. And we're still not finished building.
So how many of you was there at that stage when the 50 grand?
It was just me and my original co-founder, just me and him. Just two of us, ideas on paper.
It's very interesting for people to know that he applied to the accelerator, didn't get in, applied to the other one, got the final, no.
Yeah, and
a lot of people would stop then.
Oh, no. We had this thing where our scene was like, everything's workoutable. And every time we had like a win, we'd go to McDonald's and get an ice cream because like, that's all we had. That's all I had money for, really.
But you got to market though, whatever it is, whether it's champagne or McFlurry.
Everything's workoutable. So I'm like, I used to say there is definitely a series of right decisions to success. And the only problem is that I don't know them.
It's gonna be so many sound bites from this episode already.
I'm like, I'm obviously that was the wrong one. Let's get back on track, figure out the next ones. I'm gonna figure it out. So I went back to UStart and I asked UStart, can I please, I don't need to be in the program, but like, let me have a desk where you're keeping the people in the program, because I had like engineers that I had promised. So like it was me and him, but like I had like two engineers who I had promised like we'd get into this program and we're gonna get like accommodation and we'll have money so I'll be able to pay you, and they will help me build a demo. And so basically I was like, let me in this program so I could like maintain the facade to my engineers so that I can keep the morale up. They said no. I was like, okay, well. So then I went back to Trinity and said, will you let me guys? And then they said, yeah. So they said, you can stay, but you're not going to get the money. You're not going to get the like support at that level. And you probably won't get the one-on-one time with all the people that come in. I was like, that's fine. As long as I can pretend to my engineers that we're in the program.
That's amazing.
So we get in, then we set up our desks and chairs and we're in right smack in the middle of the room. And like, I'm there every day. I didn't get a summer job. I'm there. Actually, I was teaching piano. I was doing piano lessons to get by. And my dad was giving me €50 every week so I can get the bus to town. And then my
money, you're back in Kells?
Yeah. And then the money I got from lessons paid for food.
Wow.
So
what drove that?
Drove what?
What drove that desire, that motivation?
I just wanted to do. I was like, I'm committed here. Like, this is, in my head, I was like, what's it again? I don't know, I just wanted to be rich. I was like, this is what it takes. So like, just sit here and suffer until we get it.
I love that. That's such an honest answer. Such honesty. No one says that. No one is upfront and honest.
No, I want to be like, I'm not going to pretend like that's some like altruistic, like I'm not an engineer. So like, I didn't have the luxury of the joy of building things in that manner. You know, now I can say, oh, I enjoy building like companies and like finding product market fit and like talking to customers. I love that shit. I love like creating, I love drafting a story, creating, raising money, like building messages, building, creating my own journey. I love that. No, but like at the time, we're just like, look, I'm trying to get rich. This is what it takes.
Mm.
We're going to sit here and, you know, it. Yeah.
Going to will it into existence. Yeah. Where did you get the engineers?
That's a good question. The first engineers was like a friend of my original co-founder, and then the other one was from DCU, but I can't remember how I found him, to be honest. Okay. I have no
idea.
They're
just in your circle in some way.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Facebook. I think I put a I put an ad on the DCU computer engineering like a Facebook page. For the graduating year of that year, and I got people applying, and I just picked the one or two that I felt were good enough.
And were you paying them, or were you just promising them the future is going to be bright?
The future is going to be bright, and we're going to be. But like, it takes a special level of charisma and like the ability to influence and convince people.
Definitely
for people to like follow you on that journey with just promises. It's not easy like that. No, in fact, I could probably get away with it today without. Actually, no, that's unfair because I've sold my company. Mm. But like, I don't know a lot of people that would be able to like bring on engineers without payment and with just promises and of a grand future. I think I had that going for me, which is very fortunate to have. You can't even like manufacture that. That's, you either have it or you don't, I think.
Absolutely. So what happened? You were in Trinity.
So we're in Trinity. And then all these people are coming through. So we have people from Citibank coming through. We have people from Bank of Ireland coming through. Just coming to talk to the companies as a part of like, you know, the ecosystem. And then some of them get to talk to us, and they're like, why aren't these guys in the program? And you're like, we don't know. But like, you know. Eventually, we started talking to, they gave us like maybe two investor opportunities. The second guy we spoke to, I told my co-founder to shut the fuck up. I'm gonna take the meeting. I'm gonna get money out of this guy because there's like 3-4 weeks left of this thing, and I can't leave the summer without money.
So you were coming to the end.
Yeah. So I said to him, let's make it happen. So we had the meeting, and at the time we thought we needed 10 grand. So we had the meeting with the investor, and he's like, I like this. I like what you're doing. I've always wanted to invest in like a cybersecurity startup. I'm like, yeah, whatever. That's what we do. close enough. If it makes you happy. And then he says, how much you need? I said, 50. And he says, that's fine. I'm like, fuck, I should have said 70 or something. Yeah. Something real. And then he said he really liked my charisma and my character. Because I went back with him a little bit. He said, how much you want it for? I said, I said to him, I know what you want, but I'm going to tell you what I want. And I was like, 50 grand for X. And he was like, nah, that's not good enough for me. I was like, well, you know. Then I said, what about my happiness? And then he laughed a little bit. He was like,
what about it?
I said, he said, that's not good enough for me. And I said, yeah, but what about my happiness? and he laughed a little bit. He was like, I like you. Then we came to a number. I said, yeah, no problem. He said, my people call your people. I said, we don't have any people.
You're talking too.
Yeah, I said, we don't have people. And he said, your accountants? I was like, no. Lawyers? No. I said, oh, okay. Gives us his accountant. Tells his accountant to find lawyers for us and sets everything up. We do the investment, and within like 4 weeks, money's in the bank.
Wow.
And then put up another post on Facebook saying paid internship. And then we get better applications this time.
Had you still the two guys, or you'd cycle them through?
One of them stayed on. The other one left. And then I bring in effectively our third co-founder. Who comes in after we raise money, but like whatever, Niall, who ends up being like, you know, my main partner by the time we sold the company.
Mm.
So yeah, that was the process to like raising 50 grand. It was like a year long, you know, just talking to random people, trying to see what this ecosystem is like, talking to clients, talking to investors, trying to just build a story of like, oh, what worked. Because I remember after the Dragon's Den thing where the guy told us that, you know, that's not going to work. We are basically, you know, that basically kills the pitch. You can't really win anymore. I go back to him at the end of it. I said, you have 20 minutes or half an hour to talk to me over coffee. He says, yeah. So he meets up with me in Trinity, the Science Gallery.
Hmm.
I'm talking to him like, how would this work? What do you know that I don't know this and that? And he says,
what do you know that I don't know? It's a great question. Yeah. It's a great question.
So, and then he says, it gives me some information. And I was like, what would it take to raise money? Like, I said, what would it take to get money off you? And he answers a little bit. And I said, what if I had some sort of commitment from MasterCard or some letter of intent from MasterCard? Would that, you know, would I be able to raise money? He said, yeah, definitely. Like that's huge validation. I was like, great. And as far as I was concerned, every conversation I had from that moment on was, this VC has given me a conditional offer of X amount as long as I get validation from MasterCard. And it's not necessarily a lie, but it was a good version of the truth. So
from that day on, you had the narrative.
I had a narrative to give the next person. So, yeah, I was talking to this guy, you know, from this VC, and now they're like, yeah, okay, you know, obviously he has some direction. He's not Mickey Mouse here, you know.
That's brilliant.
No, I remember like maybe like 2 years into the company, we were doing a talk. I was doing a talk at TCU, and me and Al left the talk. I was like, I feel like we just told these kids to just lie. but it wasn't that. It was just like you have to give, because storytelling and being able to give a good narrative is such a big part of it. You have to give the best version of the truth.
Yeah.
And if you're going to lie, make sure it's true by the time that you're going to find out.
Perception's reality.
Yeah,
though.
no sporadic lies.
In a massive amount of business. Yeah, so perception is reality.
Any like non-true, better have
make
the,
it true.
But you better have the ability to make it true, or you're fucked. Because credibility is one thing that you can't sacrifice.
For
it's good that short term win isn't worth it if they end up finding out you're lying. You know.
But finance seems like such a massive problem. It seems like such and we're sitting looking at the IFSC, but like it just seems like such a them versus us. You know, you're on the outside. How did you break in?
I don't know.
Okay, that's the end of the podcast.
I don't know. I can explain to you how to like raise money, but I don't know how Look, I'm going to say luck is a big part to a degree, but there are things about me that I'm just fortunate to have and be able to do that I can't really explain why or how it came about. It's just, you know, it's probably the way it's probably my methodology in how I like try to like solve problems. What does it take to get from A to B? Let me bridge that gap. And then there's no easy for me not to get from A to B. Do you know what I mean? So money is not an insurmountable problem in that manner. Money is very cheap. You can get money anywhere. Like there's loads of investors. Like I'm sitting here with cash, like looking for someone to invest in, you know, but like it's hard to find someone that you use. So like money is cheap if you're good.
Yeah.
Oh, and like as long as I think it was because of my philosophy. Basically, I need to get from A to B, and to get from A to B, I need to get in this person's car. And this person's car is an angel investor with 50 grand, and this guy wants ABC. I can either fulfill ABC or I can't. And if I can fulfill ABC, there's no reason for me not to get the money. And if I do ABC and he says no, then he either didn't have the money or I didn't fulfill ABC.
So, I like it. Very, very straightforward.
Yeah, so like, how did I break in? Maybe I broke into the ecosystem first of all, because like I remember the story I told you earlier about having to raise 125 grand in a week. Probably 50% of that money was one call. I made one call to contacts at DCU, and because like I'd been like a success story to a degree, because we'd raised a lot of money at that
point.
Again,
perception.
Yeah, they were happy enough to make introductions to a lot of people. So the introductions they made led to probably 75 grand of the 100. Yes, let's say exactly 75 of the 125 that I need to raise. So you know, that's how I broke into the finance, but to a degree, you know. But then my first investor introduced me to like his accountant, who was willing to like tout us around to like his clients who knew had money for investment, you know. And that's how we raised our first 250 grand and our second 250 grand. But like the introductions weren't good enough. I had to create a story, and I created a story. Mm. I had to like give them, I got a non-binding letter of intent from the CIO of Ulster Bank.
Wow.
And I also got like the former COO of Commerce Bank Investments to fly to Dublin as my advisor and meet investors. I also had like someone really high up in Citibank in the UK to like also take calls as an investor, as a advisor to my investors. It's so, like the introductions is one thing, but I had a fucking good story, you know. Mm. You know, I probably still have it if I find it on my email. I have the letter from Ulster Bank CIO saying, you know, we're very interested in this. We'd love to pursue this, you know, given certain, whatever.
Non-binding. Was the story from the venture capital still in your head? You're like, I need binding letters of intent.
Yeah. I was like this
one. Non-binding letters of intent. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I need letters of intent. Non-binding just made it easier for them to send it to me.
Yeah.
You know.
So that was always your goal. You were just drawing a straight line between what he said and what you wanted.
Yeah. So like, so fulfill ABC, and you know, you can get in the car.
So you were out there doing that. The guys were back in the office working on the solution.
Yeah.
And what was the solution aiming to be at this stage?
We're still aiming to be what I described earlier, but like, there's a means to an end. So like, what we had to do to get there was to own the. Payment authentication experience for banks, which required me to be a 3D secure verified by Visa kind of vendor. And that was our short-term goal. So be a vendor, be better than everybody else, and try and get market share. But that's very hard. It was like, we're selling to banks, that was very hard. We didn't realize how hard what we were trying to do was. Mm-hmm. No. But like, that position is why Stripe bought us. You know, if we started with the merchant side, we may have failed. So like, we didn't start with the, we started with the bank because we thought it was the easiest, but it was actually really hard. But we also didn't realize it was actually the best opportunity for us at the time, given like the regulation that was coming. So like, that decision that we made was very, very important to our success, but we didn't realize like how influential the decision was until like many years later.
That was not luck as such, but that was just a decision you took that paid off massively down the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so.
Fine margins.
Like, I ran out of money 3 times. Probably more.
Bring me back to then. Okay, so you got the 50 grand. What happened next?
The first day I got the 50 grand, I spent €4,000 on 2 MacBooks for me and my co-founder, and 2 phones because you need them to do business. So spent effectively 10% of the money went straight away to like to 2 brand new company iPhones and MacBooks. Because, you know, it is.
The boys are rich now.
It is what it is. And I remember taking one of my friends to the ATM with my company credit card.
That's hilarious.
Just to show him the balance. I was like, yeah, fuck that. We actually raised the money. Like, it was like fucking hell. I was like, yeah, that's a lot of money. We're 19.
Yeah. 19. Wow.
I was 19. That's impressive. No, because I'm thinking, I don't know any 19-year-old that invested, but like, there's loads of impressive people. Ireland's just a small pool. It goes to London, there's loads of them. So we did that, then we get Niall on board, and now the next step was talking to potential customers to validate our ideas. And we spent, that was like a 6-month process, just validating ideas, trying to see what the best thing to do is. And then by like February, we had decided this is exactly what we're going
to
do.
Okay. You were talking to banks, talking to vendors.
Talking to people in the ecosystem that knew about what we were trying to do. It was like AIB, Bank of Ireland, mostly actually. They gave us a lot of information. Mm. Spoke to like Owen O'Byrne at Relax because he's just very knowledgeable in the space in general. And just, you know.
How were you received? So you bought 19?
19, 20? Hi, I am a student entrepreneur. I've raised X amount of money and I need help. Everybody wants to help you.
I'm 19 years old.
Everybody wants to help you.
I spoke to guys in Trinity last week.
They love that
entrepreneurial
society.
What I said to them. I was like, guys, you have an unbelievable opportunity for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
Use this to open every single door.
Yeah.
They're a student, blah, 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 blah. Who's not going
to
say
I'm 19, I've raised 50 grand, and you don't want to help? You're fucking, they got to get on with me. Like, everyone wants to be like part of the success story. People love helping like kids. They only be like that advisor. Everyone loves that shit. Boost your ego, you're fired.
Good advice, though. Good advice.
No, but I could only trade on that for a little bit, because eventually, when you're like 21, 22, they're like, okay, you're not a kid anymore, really, but you're not an adult. But so now you need like something else to like trade on. So then my entry had to develop. You know, it wasn't as easy. But then eventually it does get better. You know, we signed N26. Now I'm like, okay, we do N26's authentication, and every bank in Europe wants a piece of N26 or Revolut, because they're like, oh my god, they're gonna eat our
lunch. The hot sexy thing.
Yeah. So if you're working with them where you're providing a very core piece of their service, they're like, oh, what can you teach us? So like my story changed over time. But like, to answer your question, what was next? Refine the product and understand our product market fit and why we're important. And that's what we did for the next 6 months. Then we ran out of money. Then we managed to like stay afloat until we raised 250 in the summer of the following year.
How did you raise 250? Going from 50 to 250?
Ulster Bank, a letter of intent. Former CEO of Commerce Bank Investments. A guy from AIB, general manager of AIB, who AIB sent him to Poland to do an acquisition, kept him there to run the bank, and then they resold the bank to Santander, and then he's still on the board of Santander there, so he's now with us. And then he comes on, and then he says, okay, I'm going to bring some guys, and he said, if you can raise 250, these guys will join your board. So now I'm like, great, now I can tell them I have former CFO of AIB, Gary Kennedy, on my board if you give me the money. Former managing director of Accenture, Mark Ryan, if you give me the money, and current managing director of Aramark, if you give me the money, and this AIB guy who knows every bank in Europe, and these other people. So like I came to the table with like 100 years of like banking and payments experience.
So you put that one key piece together, put the other pieces around it, and then use that to raise.
Yeah, and then that's a good story. You raise money. So in like a 4 month period from like July to like November, to October. We raised $500,000, and then after that.
So you raise and raise straight again.
Yeah, raise straight again, and then another 250 in like March, but that was Enterprise Ireland money plus 125 in a week that we did. Huge influx of cash within like 6-7 months.
What was that needed for? Why are we raising so much?
Don't know.
Why not?
Why not?
To go to the ATM. Yeah.
Why not? Why not? We had no.
Were you expanding like crazy, or what was?
No,
what
we
was
wasted. We wasted that money. I'm convinced that we wasted the bus €1 million.
Wow.
Because we didn't have proper direction beyond, okay, let's build it and then we'll sell to banks, but like we didn't know how to sell, and the fact that we didn't know how to sell to banks and we didn't fix that lack of knowledge and experience quickly, wasted €1 million and 18 months
on what? Staff, everything, expenses, staff,
everything. Yeah.
Wow. So what changed? Why are we sitting here today?
We were running out of money, and then we were like, okay, austerity measures, everybody cut salaries. So we cut everybody's salaries, because like I'd rather like we survive than keep you happy on your, you know, mad salary. So everybody went to like the exact same salary. Number was €30,000 a year.
Everybody.
We cut our cost like significantly. We were burning maybe 50, 60 grand a month.
Wow.
Dropped it to maybe about 25.
You'd hired very experienced people. Big salaries.
Yeah. I can't go into detail.
No, absolutely. But I'm just trying to understand the burn.
So yeah, it's also like office space, moving around. Like, okay. It's a lot of shit. It's a lot of shit.
More money, more problems.
Yeah, more money, more problems. I know about that. austerity measures cut everyone's salary down to like 30 grand a year.
How'd you do that?
Just bring them into the room one day and say, look, this is what's going to happen. If you don't like it, you can leave. Unfortunately, like, you know, we either survive or we like keep paying you, and then we're bust in 6 months. So like, you know, you feel like we you know. So
did everyone get that?
Everyone got it.
Interesting.
They were on the mission. They understood their stock options at play. So like, we had a good culture. We had a very good culture, like, because it was very much like a very good group of friends or family. even though they worked for me, they understood like the mission. They understood what we're trying to do, and it was like it was very like, you know, we're all in this together. You know?
Your hiring was obviously bang on.
Yeah, hiring was bang on.
That's rare.
Hiring that's was super rare. I think our biggest problem was management. Because I think maybe we overplayed the. Ooh, probably shouldn't say that. Oh, there was too much transparency. Maybe I think it's hard to imagine because, like, you think everybody's as pragmatic as you are, and that everyone understands the. But it's at the end of the day, they are your employee. You are the boss.
Managing people is probably the hardest part of any business.
Yeah, but like we didn't realize that it wasn't that bad. But I think we did fall short there, and it did harm us a little bit. However, I still believe our hiring was bang on. We definitely hired the best possible team that we could have got, that anybody could have got in Dublin at that time, in my opinion. It was remarkable.
So that was you telling the story again?
Sorry?
Was that you telling the story again? You going to people and going, this is what we're doing. This is where we're going.
Yeah, it was not even really. It's just like, this is where we are. This is like, we were so transparent about everything. Like we have board meetings, or like even maybe you have a fight with a board member or something. We'd come back to the office and tell the boys.
Okay.
To be like, can you fucking believe that, John fella? You know, you tell the boys, because they were like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't see, maybe next time tell them this, next, you know.
Yeah.
So it seemed like.
They knew what was happening at all times.
So it was like, it was so transparent. It was like, look, we're all here trying to do it together. We're, you know, everything. We knew about each other's, like, girlfriends, families. It was crazy stuff.
But you were still a small team at that stage, right?
Very small team, like 10, 11 people, probably at the highest maybe like 15, 16 people. But yeah, it was cool, it was fun stuff.
Was there a moment where you were like, I think we're actually going to make it here? I think this is going to be...
After I signed N26, then I signed Revolut, then I signed Transwise. I was like, we're legit. And then I think I had like two huge contracts coming up, and like it was... They had given me the business by mouth, and we're just like maybe 3-4 months away from like getting like formal, like, just, you know, you have to do the RFP because, you know, it is what it is. You have to do the contract. So like, I was like, yeah, we're on our way. And then we were about to do a Series A, and like our cash flow was getting better. And like, you know, this was after wasting 18 months, and they were like, oh, we're on the right path, and we're getting inbounds, and we're doing well. But like, you know, we're about to do a Series A then. Then the boys from San Francisco College are like, hey, how about you stop?
How did that come about? How did they even hear about you guys?
I had reached out to Stripe because Stripe has a product called Issuing, which is basically a B2B, it's card, Jesus Christ, yeah. It's a issuing processor / kind of like, I thought it was something else, but I thought it was like an on behalf issuer, kind of like Wirecard, whereby new startups who wanted to like issue cards and like have like card related products could sit on their infrastructure and then sell their services. So I'd reached out to them so that we could be their ACS, and then the conversation developed into something else, and then they found out that we do stuff for N26, and then we were trying to like do some sort of pilot with collaboration and stuff like that, and then we had like some like product ideas that we could do together, and then After some like talks and stuff, someone just emailed me one day saying Patrick has come to Dublin and he wants to meet you guys. So I was like, oh, okay, whatever. Tell him I'm free on Monday, whatever. But like in my head, I was like, I remember saying to him, oh, fuck's sake, imagine like he wanted to buy us, that would be amazing. But like he's not.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, but he's not going to buy us. I won't buy this company right now. We're fucking shambles. I was like, you know.
So
like,
did pop into your head briefly, but you weren't trying to sell.
No, I wasn't trying to sell. In my head, I was like, oh, imagine. I said imagine because I was like, because I was thinking to myself, it couldn't possibly be this.
Yeah.
I was like, I know where we are. I know what we're doing. I was like, I wouldn't buy this company right now. We know. I was like, give us 6 more months. And yeah.
You could see all the things that are about to drop as well.
I was like, give us 6 more months and then we'd be ready. Yeah, we can sell for real money or something. You know, but I wasn't even thinking that. But I was just saying to Nell, oh, great, wouldn't it? But like, you know, whatever. Look, but we just want to talk to us because we're talking about big, like we're talking about very big agreement, product idea that we were going to do together. And talk to him for a few, like 30, 40 minutes or something like that. And then like I left and then.
Just shot the breeze, just talk about the product, talk about the companies.
Talk about company, what we're doing. where we are. And then it was like, oh, cool stuff. I was like, yeah, great to meet you, whatever.
Catch you later.
Catch you later. So we're driving back from here to Glasnevin, where our offices was, and get an email while I'm driving. Acquisition question mark, subject line. And now I was like, look, email acquisition question mark again. And I was like, that'd be fucking great, wouldn't it? I was like, no, for real. Look at your email.
From the time you left the meeting,
yeah,
by the time you got back to Glasnevin,
sends me an email.
Oh, I like that style.
And then it was like, acquisition question mark. Like, I was sending that, oh, that'd be great. I was like, no, for real, check your email. We have an email from Patrick Cassini. I was like, what? And I was like, I'm driving, I can't check this. Then he shows me his screen, and I'm like, what the fuck? Then I take his phone, and I was like, no. And then he's gone red. I was like, what the fuck? And I was like, now I can't drive anymore. I'm in shock. And he's like, you have to keep, we're in traffic, so I can't stop. We're going crazy. We're going crazy. Super excited. We're like, oh my God.
What age were you?
23.
Wow. I mean, that's the dream.
Hold on. Yeah, 23. Super excited. I was like, oh my God, it's going to be amazing. And then so we get back to the office, and then we're like, we call like everybody, we call our board members, we're like, hey, what do you think about this and that? And then obviously, you know, call your mom, you call your dad, you know, like, oh my God, fucking crazy. And then you have to stop there because, you know, you can't really tell anybody else.
Yeah.
And then,
but you knew straight away, you're like, yeah, it's a good deal, we're gonna do it.
Well, they didn't give us, there was no financial, there was no number in the email. We're just okay. Like, I was like, we so like, obviously all hope is sometimes better than reality. So we're like, oh my God, we're gonna imagine the number.
Yeah.
We're gonna imagine a number and we're gonna go with it. And they were like, okay, what are you gonna buy?
Had you a number in your head?
We had a number in our head, yeah.
Okay.
So then we were in the office till 1 a.m. just looking at shit online, like,
can I get that in fluorescent pink?
He was like,
black alloys and
building cars on AstonMartin.com. fucking mad shit, mad shit.
And what was the next steps then? Were you like, yeah, sounds good.
Flew to San Francisco weekend.
That weekend
flew to San Francisco.
The pace of this is phenomenal. Yeah. This is the interesting stuff that I love chatting to people about, because no one knows this. Yeah. No one understands.
Flew to San Francisco that weekend. And that was the week of my 24th birthday, actually. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we were doing workshops. Tuesday was my birthday. And they actually brought me cakes and stuff to this one. So we did workshop for 3 days. It was cool.
How do you mean? As in you...
Oh, we did workshops. We walk them through the product.
Okay.
What we're doing, why we're doing what we're doing. Pipeline, financial situation, all just give full unbundling of the company, trying to like tell everybody exactly what we're doing, why we're doing it, and giving them like imagine a board meeting that lasted 3 days.
Okay, wow.
Where have you come from? What are you doing right now? Why are you doing it? I give us like as much technical depth into the architecture as possible. And then we spent some time, and then I can't give like specific timeline, but like from that point moment on, spent some time trying like agree a price, and then we signed a term sheet. Then from the term sheet, we did like months of like legal works where me now would be like in the office, in our lawyer's office, like 4 a.m. in the morning, consistently just trying to like get through like due diligence and stuff. And then eventually,
did you always know you wanted to sell from that point on?
We built to sell.
Okay.
We were trying to sell in like. The hope was that we'd sell in 2 years from that day. Like we had an agenda and like a plan. Like 2 years from that day, we'd be able to sell. We'd be in a position to sell.
That's a great mentality. Built to sell.
Oh yeah, well that's what most people do now.
Very few people admit it though. They're like, oh, it's my baby. I love it. I could never get rid of it.
Some people. I met a guy. Fucking like. Can I see this on the podcast?
Just no names, maybe, or industries. You can blank it out.
One of my friends, actually I can say this, my friend, his name is Shola, he's the CEO of Paystack is like the African Stripe, and like with that guy genuinely, I don't think he's in it for the money.
Really?
I don't think he's in it for the money. I've never met anyone like that in my life. I don't think he's in it for the money. His vision in life right now is I want to fix payments in Africa. So right now, like online payments, I want to fix payments in Africa.
Okay.
I talk about it all the time. I'm like, you don't care. And like his answers are so consistent. I was like, I don't care.
That's fascinating. He's driven by something.
Only
else.
Person I know. But like, however, he's an engineer.
Okay. So like he thinks a little bit differently.
Yeah, he's an engineer. So like he has the luxury of like, you know, being a product manager in a way that I couldn't be. Whereby okay. I could be in the nitty gritties of like, you know, we can fix that way. Just, you know. But there are people like that. And then there's people like me. And then, but like, it's not that we're different. It's just that he found a mission that he cared about. Maybe my next bit startup would be a mission that I cared about that much. That like, no, I would, you know, I wanna fix X for Y.
You just wanted to build something.
Yeah, you know. But it's fascinating. You get into it. It's really cool.
What did it feel like when the deal was done?
It took too long, so like I didn't care anymore. No, it took too long. I mean, like the day we signed, I was like, yeah. It felt like a really good achievement. It felt like, yeah. I think the only thing it gave me was like, I remember being a kid saying like, I want to be rich, I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to, and like, you know, you have this perception of your life that you think you're going to live. And very few people actually get to realize the perception of the life they had as a kid, because life hits you and then fuck, reality hits and they're like, oh, you know, it's not that easy. Mm-hmm. And like to have achieved what I wanted as a kid at 24 and like have that in paper signed, I think that moment was probably the most fuck, this is it, I did it. I called my dad, I was like, signed, it's finished. He was like, really? Like, yeah. My mom called me, she's like, are you sure you want to fucking sell? I was like, you know, you can. my mom, till the day, she was like, you know, you can change your mind. She's like, my mom was like, I don't think you should sell. The day I was.
Really?
Yeah, the day that everyone was in the office there to sign, my mom was like, I don't think you should sell. I was like, okay.
Why?
She was like, I don't know. She was like, yeah, Bill Gates didn't sell his company. I was like, shut the fuck up.
I love her. I love her style.
I was like, first of all, okay, this is not Microsoft. You know, we're not the same. I think I have a, let me see if I can show you this. I have a,
were you in San Francisco when you sold?
No, we're in Dublin. I'm going to show you what's it called? A time lapse I made.
Oh wow!
The time lapse is like 10 minutes long, but like I have a short version from when we were signed. Let me see if I can see your activity. Hold on. Oh, it's archive. That's it.
What was the first? Why are you bringing that up there? What was the first thing you wanted to do?
What did we do? That's a good, we were in the lawyer's office like 4 a.m., 3 a.m. getting things signed and trying to like fix all the problems that we had, because there were still like last minute problems that everyone fucking.
Yeah, you always see this on TV and people talking about it in books and stuff. Going, oh, we're there at 4 a.m. Is it because there's such time sensitivity about these things, or why does it always go like
speed?
That?
It got to a point where there was time sensitivity and just like there was a deadline and like we had stuff to do. And like there was an absence of progress in certain things that we were doing.
Okay.
Yeah, and like we can't be stagnant for that long. So there was the 3:21 a.m. that night. Actually, that was the night before. 3:21 a.m. the night before we signed.
Does it feel a bit and then, weird though, just sitting in an office?
And then the day we signed. And then,
so because of the podcast, I'll explain to people, there's just a massive boardroom, a lot of people around it, just paper, food, laptops everywhere.
And then the day we signed, that's me right there, and that's my co-founder now. And this is my favorite time lapse.
So for everyone listening, it's just the two lads just sitting in these very plush executive chairs, just chatting to each other as if it's the most normal thing in the world.
Yeah. And then the next snap, as you can see, is me in San Francisco 2 days later.
And then it was done. 2 days later, you're in San Francisco.
And then this cryptic, me and my
new chapter. Oh,
no one knew exactly what that was about.
So no, you probably couldn't. All your friends, I couldn't. No one knew what was going on. Just the lads are traveling a lot.
Yeah, we just had to wait until the until they published it in press before we could say anything about it. Those were just like 2 or 3 weeks later.
That must have been chaos, though, was it?
Yeah, it was chaos. Fucking terrible. We had like some issues with an injunction against us for something that was like wrong, and like when you Google Stripe and TouchTech was the first thing that came up.
Oh wow!
The day that the acquisition was like announced, so like it was huge. Oh my god, we called everybody. We're calling the company's house in UK. We're like, you have to get this removed. And we're calling. They were like, you have to get the person that put it up to remove it. And we called them, and we said, well, even if they remove it, it's just public record that it happened, so you can have it removed. It was fucking. And then we're like, well, what you have to do is you have to like push it down the search result.
Oh wow!
So then we started calling those. So they started calling new news outlets and giving quotes. So now, like over like the next 2-3 hours, there was like maybe 10 more articles published with quotes from me and now and stuff like that. Just so by the time we were finished, it got to like page 3.
That's incredible.
On a Google search, like it didn't come up anymore. So like it was like that and the fact that my phone wouldn't stop ringing for like 2-3 days.
Just everybody.
Everyone
wants to talk to you.
Everybody wanted to talk to me. Yeah, and if you Googled me in that week specifically, the first suggestion was Shekinah at Umi Net Worth.
So, oh, absolute baller.
So obviously everybody was like, how much did this guy sell for?
Oh, that's class.
Yeah, it was fun stuff. I think
apart from the day we found out we were going to sell and
to a degree the day we signed it, I think the next happiest day was the day we got paid.
Okay.
So like,
is there a delay? There's a big delay, is there?
Yeah, it was a delay because like it takes a while to like close and like finish off some paperwork. But the day was like maybe like a week and a half between sign and pay. The day we got paid, I remember I was actually in a meeting. I was in a meeting, and Niall texted me. He was like, "Check your account." I was like, "What do you mean?" He said, "Check your account." And I checked my account, and I was like, "Holy fuck!" Bear in mind, I had like 4 cents in my account the day we got.
Really?
Yeah, I had 4 cents in my account. So like,
I
was fucking broke.
Really?
Yeah, I was broke.
Everyone says that story, but you're like, bullshit.
I was broke. I was
really?
Like,
4 cents?
Yeah, 4 cents.
Not even a McFlurry.
Not even a fucking McFlurry. I was fucking broke. I remember like, I borrowed money off my dad before he went to San Francisco, and I split the money with Nell because he was broke too.
Really?
So, yeah. So I think my dad
poured everything.
My dad gave me like €1,000 before we went to San Francisco. Like after we had signed, we went to San Francisco. Okay. And I was broke. So my dad gave me like €1,000, like €1,500. So I took $750 and I gave $750 to Niall. I was like, Jesus, better fucking pay me back.
Yeah. I know, you're good for it though.
Yeah, he never paid me back actually. I just paid my dad off. So I gave Niall $750, I took $750, and we did that loads of times. Loads of times. Like come up to the end of the month and you'd be like, how much you have left? I was like, I have like $200. I was like, well.
Really?
Yeah, no, loads of times. So I think I was in a meeting and he texted me. I was like, holy fuck. And then I actually said, I said, guys, can you give me more? I'll be back. So I left to the meeting.
Run into the bathroom to scream.
No, I ran to Nell's table, gave him a hug, and I came back to my meeting.
Oh, amazing.
I was like, now that we are back. Yeah, so it was cool. It was cool.
So you're now working with Stripe?
And I work for Stripe, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And TouchTech has been incorporated in.
TouchTech is incorporated in, yeah. So like I work for the TouchTech team inside Stripe.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So it's fun stuff, as you know.
What a journey. Listen, we'll wrap it up there. I want you to actually recommend one book also. I probably know what it's going to be. If you recommend a book, we give it a book away each week.
Mm-hmm.
So a book that's kind of made a big impact on you in your career. So I know you mentioned a couple earlier, but is there any other ones you think has big impact?
No, I don't think... So the book that had the most impact for me was the... probably it was a combination of the two. So the Rich Dad, Poor Dad and Think and Grow Rich. But I don't think that book is for everybody.
Okay.
Because not everybody's going to be an entrepreneur. Mm. And a lot of people can live a good life, a good middle class life, happy life, climbing the ladder in their career, building up a good retirement fund and retiring happy. So I don't think that's for a specific kind of person.
Mm.
Well, I think The two books I would probably recommend the most are The 12 Rules of Life by Jordan Peterson.
Okay.
And Rules of Thinking by, let me check.
Okay, so let me check. 12 Rules of Life, Jordan Peterson. I have not read that yet.
Rules of Thinking by...
I've seen Jordan Peterson on Joe Rogan a couple of times.
Yeah, he's very good. Yeah, Rules of Thinking by Richard Templar.
Okay.
Those two books are very good.
Sweet. We'll give away both of those. All people have to do is to share the episode.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No worries. No worries.
And that was episode 45. There's definitely a book, if not a movie, in Shekinah's story. So I absolutely love that podcast. As I mentioned at the start of the podcast, I want you to jump on to intercast.ie, check out the concept, send me your feedback, send me your ideas, and also send me your introductions to companies that could benefit from it. I will see you next week, Thursday at 6 a.m. for next week's podcast. In the meantime, have a good week.